So if you're saying Bill Russell, and we've talked about Ted Williams with you already, Bill Russell is the most revered, the most loved to this day. If we turn to ice hockey finally, where does Bobby Orr come in?
I think Bobby Orr is right in back of Bill Russell. And I would say the only reason that he is not as revered as Russell is that he didn't face the discrimination and racism that Bill did. But in terms of being a quality human being, Bobby Orr is right there. First of all, as an athlete, he came to Boston as an 18-year-old out of Prairie Sound, Ontario, and he did, I mean, he was what you would call a culchie. I mean, a bog man. He knew nothing. And he had just been playing hockey since he was 4 years old. That's all he knew how to do. And when you look at pictures of him, he had like pimples and stuff. But the thing that Bobby Orr did, he revolutionized the game in that he was the first offensive defenseman to really become, he was not just the best defenseman in that game, he was the best offensive player on the ice. And that had never, ever, nobody had ever approached that, that you had the best defender and also be the best offensive player on the ice.
It sounds like Johan Cruyff and exactly football.
Very similar.
So he joins as an 18-year-old in 66 from Canada. At that stage, the Boston Bruins had not won a Stanley Cup since 1941. So there's a proper drought going on. And with Orr, the Bruins win the Stanley Cup twice, 1970 and 72. So I make it he's, what, 22 and 24 territory.
And if you watch, and you could get just go onto YouTube, and I would tell your listeners to do it to get a sense. If you watch old clips of Bobby Orr on the ice, it looked like he was playing at one speed and they were all playing at another.
And the
elegance of his skating. I mean, he was just, he could accelerate and it did not look like his legs were moving any faster.
Because I see as well that his first professional contract was one of the first in professional ice hockey to be negotiated by an agent. And he was, you know, the highest paid player in NHL history as a rookie. So like this guy was,
and I think, I don't know if the name is there, but I think, is it Bob Wolf who represented him? I think.
I don't have it here. I just saw
that. I'm pretty sure it was Bob, and Bob also was Larry Bird's agent.
Right, okay.
He was the first famous super agent in sports. And yeah, Bobby, so Bobby, but this is the, like I said, he just, unfortunately, he had a series of knee injuries, and he played it, if he had played now, with the advances in medicine, Bobby would have had a 20-year career, but he just lost cartilage and it was just terrible. By the end of his career, he had no cartilages in his knees.
Right.
And it was it's almost like having a metal joint and just scraping against metal.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly painful.
He retires in 1978, age 30.
Unbelievable.
So he's cut really short.
He had another 10 years. Like I said, if you put him today and modern medicine and also the fitness regimes that these guys go through, Bobby Orr would have doubled his career, and it's hard to believe what he would have accomplished.
Because of Ted Williams, who you've talked to us about, and Bill Russell, of the three, I'm the least familiar with
Bobby Orr.
With Bobby Orr. So I appreciate the brilliance and, you know, the famine, the Stanley Cup famine, he bridges that, that gap, and so that's a huge thing. But so what is it about his personality or his demeanor, I suppose, that kind of captures the imagination of Bostonians,
first
even
of all,
to this day?
He's really self-effacing.
Okay.
He's not a bragger. People brag about him, but he would never brag about himself. It's interesting because, like I said, he was a Canadian culchie.
Yeah.
And he only was in Boston for, 10 years, but then he never left. He always stayed. And he was always the kind of guy, but you wouldn't see him on TV, you wouldn't see him in the papers, but you used to see him on the street and stuff, and Bobby was very good to my cousin, John Cunniff. John Cunniff was one of the greatest American players of his era, but he only had a cup of coffee. I think he might have played 9 NHL games, and he actually died very young of cancer. He was 54. And I remember going to his funeral, or after the funeral, we went to a time at the Dorchester Teachers Hall in Boston, and Billy Cleary, the longtime Harvard coach, was there. And I'm a hockey guy. I know all these hockey guys because of my family. And I went up to Billy, and we just got talking. And I said, Billy, when I was a kid, I would run down to the corner store to get the hockey news every week and see how my cousin was doing. And John was like always like number one, two, or three in leading scoring in the AHL, which was the main minor league. And I said, but he never got into the NHL. And Billy looked at me and said, that's because he was an American. And the Canadians didn't want Americans. So it was sort of a smaller, I wouldn't compare it to what African Americans went through in baseball. But it was a similar thing. It was kind of prejudice. And in fairness to the Canadians, there's a real inferiority complex growing up in Canada, the big neighbor who's a pain in the neck, and Americans don't endear themselves to anybody. I mean, I like Canadians. I think Canadians are genuine, especially if they're hockey fans. They're just decent, good people. And Bobby kind of like was very important for my cousin. And I think my cousin had a drinking problem from, and I think a lot of it was rooted in his frustration that he wasn't getting a shot in the NHL. John actually went on to make some serious money, at least in that era, in the 70s when he signed with the alternative league, the World Hockey Association, in which, in fact, Bobby's best friend, Derek Sanderson, left the Bruins, and they gave him $1 million. No hockey player ever got $1 million. And my cousin, I think he signed for like $250,000, which was big money back then. And so, but he only got to that stage because in the middle of his playing career as in the AHL, he had a drinking problem, and basically somebody went to Derek because Derek was a drunk and Derek got sober, and Bobby got him sober, and so Derek and Bobby showed up and did an intervention with my cousin. They showed up at one of the Binghamton games, I think it was, when he was playing for a minor league team, and said, "We're going to get you help," and John got sober. And then went on to have one of the most illustrious coaching careers as an American in a Canadian game. He was the assistant coach for 4 U.S. Olympic teams. He was the head coach of the Boston Bruins, and then he was the head coach of the New Jersey Devils, and is well famed in the NHL annals for being the only head coach of a hockey NHL team who asked to go back to the minor leagues.
Right.
He said he wanted to teach kids, and Lou Lamoriello, the general manager of the New Jersey Devils, granted his wish. And for the last 4 years of his life, John had their AHL franchise and unfortunately, as I said, died. But I remember when it was a very moving scene at John's wake in South Boston, because he was from South Boston, South Boston native. And my mother was, his mother died very young, and my mother was more or less his surrogate mother. And he was very close to my mother, John. And Bobby showed up at the wake. And and I remember my mother hugged him and said, "John only lived this long because of you, Bobby."
Wow. It's heavy.
It was. It was a beautiful scene, though. And I saw Bobby at a golfing tournament, I don't know, 2 years ago, and he came up to me and he goes, "I miss your mom. She was really nice."
Wow, what a touch of class.
He was
great guy.
Bobby was just and like I said, he actually wrote a book a few years ago, and everybody was shocked because he wasn't a bragger. He never bragging.
I was going to say, so from 1980, he's just retired. He's 32 years old. And it's amazing to hear, you know, him helping out your cousin and almost little private acts of altruism like that. What's he doing? I mean,
he's golfing.
He's living life.
He's a nutbag golfer. So Bobby golfs every day.
He's enough money to just live a life of leisure kind of thing.
There was a guy named Bob Crane who was the treasurer of Massachusetts. And Bob took Bobby under his wing and helped him with his money.
Okay.
Because a lot of the young Canadian kids they came to America and they squandered everything.
A bit raw.
They didn't know what they were doing.
So Bobby Orr was clever and got sorted.
But, you know, for that 10 years he played, he was probably the most popular athlete in Boston. If you take into account, minority folks don't really, in general, don't support hockey. But he was really, and I think one of the reasons he was so loved is because he didn't talk about himself.
Okay.
He was great as a player, but he was so humble, and people liked that.
Yeah, sure.
And then again, not many people knew about Bobby's acts of particularly helping alcoholics. They didn't know how many lives, and not just alcoholics. He helped people with mental illness. He's just a class act. And then Bob Holder, my colleague, who's a sports writer at the Globe. Bob did a piece maybe 6 or 7 years ago about this is what Bobby Orr has been doing for the last 40 years.
Okay.
And that led to somebody called him and said, "You should do a book." And Bobby goes, "Oh, okay." And he wrote a book. So I read his book. Not once did he say, I was a great player. He didn't say anything like that.
Yeah.
He talks about other players and how much he loved Gretzky. He thought Gretzky was great. He loved Sidney Crosby. He loved... who was the great defenseman, Phil Housley, who played for the Buffalo Sabres and was very much like Bobby, in that when Phil Housley was on the ice, he was the best defenseman, but he was also probably the most dangerous shooter from the point. So just a great guy. And like I said, he lives down in Cape Cod and plays golf every possible day he can at the Ridge Club, which is a really nice course. Yeah. That I think the best score I ever had at the Ridge Club on when I had a great day was 96. Because there is more sand at the Ridge Club. I call it the beach.
Right.
And one of these, in fact, Andy Brickley, who's now he's the color commentator for the Bruins. And he has a show that basically golfing with Brick. And so he's going to do it with Bobby this season. And he says, yeah, you can come along and tag along. So I can't wait.
Sure?
I got to drive the cart.
Well, thank you for telling us about your top three Bostonian sports people. So we've had Ted Williams, Bill Russell, and now Bobby Orr. I'm firmly in the Bobby Orr camp after that. Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe, thank you. Give your liver a break over the next few days.
Nah.
And enjoy Dublin.
Thanks, Joseph.
Thanks a million.
God bless.
Cheers.
Thank you.